America's Cannabis Conversation. Heard every Saturday online at americascannabisconversation.com. We're part of the W420 Radio Network, and each week we provide you with information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and recreational cannabis industry. You'll hear from industry leaders, elected officials, local experts, detractors, and more. Learn how to build your own cannabis business, how to grow the product, what's legal, and where it's legal. Tune in each week to hear updates from the National Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis markets, personal success stories, and more. It's now time to join America's Cannabis Conversation.
America's Cannabis Conversation at the W420 Radio Network celebrates 5 years of podcasting. This October marks our half-decade anniversary. It has been an interesting journey in a unique and burgeoning industry. This fall, we launch a new initiative of bringing you more guests, relevant information, news, updates, and more in cannabis programming. This is your one-stop shop for all things related to cannabis, marijuana, and hemp. In this episode, you'll hear from W420 Radio CEO Mark Corsi with comments on the program and what we are doing to bring you more as a listener. You also hear from some of our top media correspondents with on-the-field interviews. Sports Broadcasting Hall of Famer Rich Walkoff captured an interview from the floor of the Emerald Cup Harvest Ball as he spoke with Peter Motla from Orange Photonics, who bring us the Light Lab 3 Cannabis Analyzer. Women in Cannabis correspondent Chase Roberts brings us an interview from the floor of the Emerald Cup as she spoke with Sarah Payan of the Planted with Sarah Payan podcast conversation, encompassing the vast world of cannabis with a focus on education. Follow us at W420RadioNetwork.com to catch the cannabis wave. And now, here are some of the comments from CEO and co-founder of America's Cannabis Conversation, Mark Corsi.
We started this and we had the conversations and what we wanted to do and achieve in the marketplace in the cannabis industry. I think what's really relevant is the cannabis industry is really growing, and so are we. So the fact of the matter is what I was analyzing when we started with 4 states and 20 markets, and then we rolled on to 11 legalized states and 100 different markets. But then with the additions of 24/7, it was also very significant that what we finally achieved was iHeartRadio picked us up, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. And then with the addition of AM FM 24/7, the fact of the matter is that that audience is over 800,000 in a month right now. The cannabis investments, right, whatever it may be,
right,
we've had some pretty big significant people. But then I also was looking back at the press releases. And the press releases that we've done, I was reviewing those in terms of announcing the network itself and then coming in with the first successful month on the air. Then we have our expert commentators. It just goes on and on. And the fact of the matter is reaching out all those multiple touch points of different people and the audience with the diversity of that.
The interesting thing that I thought was fun about, you know, Patrick, when we got together and we're talking about strategy, strategic plans, how many spots we would put in here, we break it off regionally, how many medical states, how many recreational states. And then we'd make those announcements like, oh, we've got somewhere in Colorado now. Now we've got this state. And it's gone from medical and it's gone through the recreational side. That growth was pretty incredible because I think we started out with 11 markets. And our audience, I just remember, is like, how are we going to build this audience here? It was great. We were so excited on the launch. We spent so much time, and we had, you know, the creative part with Martin and there and David. And then we had lifestyle people and all those particular things. But building it and saying, okay, how many cannabis associations are there? Where are they? There's a hemp association. How many do we have in California, for instance? Well, we have San Diego, LA, San Francisco, Denver. You got Colorado, and you're breaking them into micro regions and everything. But they've kept expanding. It was fun looking at the numbers saying, okay, California started with a certain amount of people of 500, and now there are 2,500 people on the association. I'm not sure what they are today. But everything kind of continues to grow. But to build a platform and create this radio network and this podcast to go ahead and grow with the industry and having to react, it's been fun. It's been challenging sometimes to go ahead and say, hey, we just went ahead and we need to add three more states, and we need to go ahead and add this on the website, and we have to go ahead and broaden our audience. I think the other fun thing was is that we learned is we just had one talk show host for a while, and it was run like a national host, but then we decided to refine and define, and that's when we came up with Lifestyle with Rich Wolkoff, and we came up with Women in Cannabis, and then we had our other particular show. The other thing that I thought was cool was our content. It's not like, hey, the dope's great in LA today, right? When we used to have those old radio shows in the 70s, you know, it was interesting when we found out that there was a gentleman from Harvard, and he was a doctor, and he was identifying a cannabis strain for pancreatic cancer, or also in the baking industry and the regulation of that. I love when Rich would go, hey, let me try and interview these guys on this new drink. And he goes, of course, the 2% and 10%. Oh, my God, the difference on that.
Yeah.
And the fun. And then it was also cool about, you know, we had the Jelly Belly guy, right, who went ahead and did CBD. And he was such a success. And we've had these great people. I mean, and then Rich walks in and does, what was it, Barnes with the Golden State Warriors and the championship team. And he goes into Las Vegas, and we used to send you guys there, and he'd walk into him and did a great interview. So it's been so fun to sit down and talk about this when we started this, Patrick, and then it's built and involved in this great team and all these great stories and interesting people. And as me being in the public relations business, right, in the advertising PR business, I've always said I'm good at cocktail parties because we launch products, and it might be cellular, or be the Raiders or a PGA or insurance. But this has been really interesting about talking about all these different regulations and what we do and these really interesting people.
Are you interested in learning more about cannabis? Have you thought about starting your own cannabis business but don't know how? If so, we invite you to join the Cannabis Conversation with other people like you who are looking at the exciting opportunities in this exploding business. Listen to America's Cannabis Conversation on Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. You'll hear from industry experts and get insights into the cannabis industry. For archived shows and for more information, log on to americascannabisconversation.com. Time now for another intriguing tale on the ever-fascinating cannabis trail with W420 Radio Network's lifestyle correspondent, Rich Wolkoff.
Well, here we are at the Harvest Ball Weed Festival in Santa Rosa, California, a couple hours south of the Emerald Triangle, the epicenter of the greatest weed in the world here in the W420 Radio Network. And I run into Pete Motla from Light Lab Cannabis Analyzers, Orange Photonics. I've never heard of this, but it's an orange box that analyzes the THC content of your weed and a lot more. So Pete, tell me about this incredible product.
Sure. So Light Lab is our portable HPLC, so liquid chromatography, specifically designed for cannabis analysis. The analyzer will provide a complete cannabinoid profile, up to 18 different cannabinoids for which we can analyze. And as you said, THC, THCV, THCO, HHC, CBD, CBG, on and on and on with the alphabet soup of the cannabinoids for which we can analyze.
Okay, now if I'm at a lab, you know, a state authorized laboratory, these devices are very expensive. Now, not that your orange box is inexpensive, but talk about the contrast in the pricing and what they actually determine.
Sure. So ours is small, portable, easy to use HPLC. It was designed specifically for non-technical users. The lab's HPLCs are large and very expensive and can work with 100 different products. It can be cannabis, it can be tomatoes, it can be paint, it can be a lot of different things. Our Light Lab analyzer is specifically for cannabis, and the on-screen instructions will talk the user through the analysis, sample prep, and what they need to do. So you don't need a chemist or a scientist to operate the device. It's very straightforward, very easy, and very fast. A total analysis time is 8.5 minutes. with another 5 or 10 minutes of sample prep time up front.
Yeah, you did my mango mentality, which I personally grew, and I got a clone from a local club here in Northern California, and I guesstimated it would be around 21% THC. It came in a little bit under. But as I've shared on the W420 radio network in the past, THC content is like horsepower in a car. And just because you have more horsepower doesn't make it a better car. A Dodge Charger is not better than a Ferrari. Similarly with cannabis.
That's exactly right. The plant has a lot going on. It's a very complex plant, as we've discussed with all those various cannabinoids. So it's more than just the THC content that a lot of folks are looking for. Unfortunately, the THC number seems to be the one that many consumers pay most attention to, and some only pay attention to it. But there's a lot more to it than just that number.
Yeah, and because people are so enamored with the horsepower of the THC, there are a lot of labs coming under scrutiny in California and probably elsewhere for either misrepresenting or mislabeling the THC content of the cannabis.
Yeah, we've heard stories. We haven't run into that specifically ourselves. I'm hoping that a lot of that goes away. It's not good for the industry, and it goes against everything that the science is supposed to be doing, which is to provide real, accurate data, not numbers that are going to make the customer happy, even if they're not correct.
Yeah, and I'm going to get sticker shock. Now, Talk about the other cannabinoid that you can gauge in the orange box.
So again, we can do up to 18 different cannabinoids right now. We're always looking to add additional cannabinoids to the profile. Sometimes the hold up there is waiting for standards to exist for which we can measure against. So sometimes we're doing the research, but we can't add it to the profile until some of the compliance organizations come up with standards for us to measure.
Okay, now, as we mentioned earlier, the more sophisticated lab testing devices can run tens of thousands of dollars. Not that this is cheap, but by comparison, it's fairly inexpensive, relatively speaking.
Exactly. A new HPLC will easily go for over $100,000, $150,000, and require a chemist that you're going to pay another $150,000 to operate. This, as we said, is significantly less expensive, and anybody that can read the on-screen instructions can perform the analysis.
Now, tell me about your company. First of all, the price is roughly $16,000?
That's correct. The analyzer itself is $15,900. When one adds some appropriate options and accessories to it, an average sale price could be up around $18,000 or a little bit more.
Okay. So, and your target market audience?
Would be anyone from fairly large cultivators to folks that are extracting or processing to make oils or tinctures or gummies. It's a great quality control tool for a lot of those folks, where they're able to not only test incoming biomass, but also test their product at various stages through the processing.
Interestingly, it's not just the flower that you can test, because a lot of people are curious about my edibles. Are they really as potent as they claim, or are they more potent? I know there were issues in Colorado and the onset of the recreational, the introduction of recreational cannabis.
Yep.
A decade ago or so, where people were freaking out because they didn't realize how much THC was in a little candy corner, chocolate or whatnot.
Exactly.
So now, how do you determine that?
So we've just come out with a new version of our Light Lab analyzer that's specifically for edibles. It will do everything that the standard Light Lab 3 will do, plus it gives you the ability to for edibles in various formats. So it can be chocolates, it can be gummies, and again, as well, we can still do other forms of concentrates, tinctures and waxes, dabs.
Yeah, and how about vaping? I understand that you can also quantify the THC level in vapes.
Yeah, the oil in the vape cartridges we are able to also analyze.
Okay, and is that process more advanced or more sophisticated or more challenging?
No, it actually isn't. The only thing that's a little more challenging when you're dealing with some of that is making sure that you're getting the appropriate amount of sample into the vial to do the testing. So it's a little bit more difficult sample format to work with because it can be sticky and stringy, but ultimately the trick is make sure you get the appropriate amount of sample into the vial for testing.
Yeah, we're talking with Pete Motla from Light Lab Cannabis Analyzer. The Orange Photonics, it's an orange box with all kinds of sophisticated technology in it. It looks like you have the nuclear codes in there, but we only find out the THC. You're not going to, you know, push the button and the world as we know it, thankfully. But Pete, how did this come about technologically? You've been around not very long.
Right. The company itself is about 5 years old. It was, we're based out of New London, New Hampshire. And Dylan Wilkes is our CTO, our Chief Technical Officer, and he's the one that invented and designed and developed the Light Lab. We've come a long way in these 5 years. The first versions were good. These current versions are fantastic. They can do a lot more. They're more accurate, more flexible.
How about the industry in general? How's your market share and competition and the like?
Well, we're the only portable HPLC analyzer in the world that we've ever encountered. We don't find that we're competing with the labs. We don't replace the certified outside labs. What we do allow is for our customers to be able to obtain a whole lot of in-house data very quickly, very easily. And this is data on which they can then base important business decisions about time to harvest, about cost, about pricing.
Cool. And your colleague was telling me that the Homeland Security is using devices like yours, or maybe even yours, at the border when hemp is brought across from Mexico. Tell me a bit about that.
That's right. So one of the other markets that we do sell to, it's not just the, you know, cannabis growers or producers. We do have a version specifically for law enforcement, and they will use it to monitor illegal growing operations. Or, like you said, the CBP has just purchased few analyzers to make sure that hemp that's coming across the border is in fact hemp.
So ironically, when I tested my weed, I'm looking for the higher THC level. When it comes across the border and it's characterized as hemp, we're looking for the opposite. It has to be below 0.03. Is that what it is?
0.3%.
0.3%
is the legal limit for hemp. Light Lab's hemp compliance mode actually goes down to 0.05%, well below that. So there's a lot of headroom in there. So we're very accurate on confirming that hemp is in fact hemp or not, as
right,
the case
right, right.
may be.
It's the poor cousin. How about worldwide distribution? Are we only looking at this as a domestically purchased product, or are you getting action and traction around the world?
We have focused mainly on North America. We have a lot of Canadian customers where cannabis has been legal in Canada for longer than it has here in the U.S. So we've had most of our clients are, in fact, in North America. That said, we're getting a lot of interest from various countries around the world as things start opening up with not just with adult use cannabis, but with hemp as well. So we do have, we are slowly expanding into international markets with Light Lab. We want to be a little bit careful how we roll it out. We want to make sure we're supporting our customers appropriately and offering the level of support that they would need. And we're a small company, so we need to be a little bit careful about spreading ourselves too thin.
Sure, and a lot of engineering goes into this. How has the technology advanced in the 5 years? And do you foresee major enhancements or improvements in the technology itself?
Well, I think we're going to let the market kind of help us determine what some of our next moves will be. Coming out with the Light Lab high sensitivity version that I mentioned earlier, that's specifically for edibles, or, you know, edibles as well as others. has been, that was mostly dictated by interest by the marketplace. We found more and more and more customers wanting to be able to test gummies and other forms of edibles. So as far as what the future holds, we'll have to see. My crystal ball doesn't work real well, and that's probably a better question put to our technical team.
Yeah. I was wondering if you would consider, you know, having your boxes in dispensaries and charging like $10 for a sample or $20 to find out how the composition is of a given strain or a given product versus having to purchase the unit for, you know, $16,000 to $18,000.
Yeah, well, we do have some customers that have in fact decided to buy LightLab and use it as a mobile testing device. And they will generate their own customer list of potential clients, and go around doing sample testing for them. It's probably not just growers that will be able to take advantage of that, those that would not necessarily be able to spend that kind of money on their own device, but still would like the ability to collect data quickly rather than having to wait for the labs. So I could see dispensaries at some point down the road finding this to be a viable way to do their own in-house testing, for sure.
Hey, it's cool stuff. You're a fascinating guy, and your product is killing it here at the Harvest Ball Weed Festival in Santa Rosa, California. A lot of people coming up and going, what is that? Or, hey, can I try my weed and tell me what the THC content is? And in 15 minutes or so, they've got the answers. So a pleasure getting to know you, Pete, and good luck with you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much. We appreciate the interest. The Orange Box is a wonderful, wonderful analyzer. It's easy to use. It's fast. It's very accurate. And it's been a great product. It's a lot of fun to work with.
Awesome stuff. Light Labs Cannabis Analyzer, Orange Photonics, with Pete Motla. I'm Rich Walkoff on the W420 Radio Network.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com. America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com. It's time for Women in Cannabis on America's Cannabis Conversation, part of the W420 Radio Network.
Didn't you get the memo?
Here's Chase Roberts.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Chase Roberts, Women in Cannabis correspondent for the W420 Radio Network. It's a pleasure to introduce Gia Marone, president of Women Grow, founder and CEO of GVM Communications, board member of Minorities for Medical Marijuana, advisory board member of the Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo, and has over 25 years of expertise in the communications industry. Gia, welcome. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Thank you so much, Chase. It's an honor to be here. And I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Me as well. And I'm sure our listeners are too. Let's start with Women Grow. It is the largest professional network for women in the cannabis industry. Please tell us about its mission. I know it has four different points to its mission. Maybe we can go over some of that.
Absolutely. So Women Grow was founded in 2014 in Denver, Colorado, by Jane West and her co-founder, Jasmine Hump. And the company expanded nationally, well, I would say internationally, because we had markets in Canada as well. So we were certainly an international and still are an international company. I started out in the New York market, but what attracted me to Women Grow was its mission, which was to educate, connect, educate, empower, and inspire the next generation of cannabis leaders. And I love that. It just spoke to me because, one, I already understood that there were a lack of women representation in the industry. And that's the whole reason why Women Grow was founded. And really what I feel like created such a strong community in the industry to invite more women from other industries, right? Or those who are considering starting a business to enter this industry.
I found that according to Weed Week, only 8% of CEOs in the cannabis industry are women. And I know you can speak to that. I think it's also there's only 27% of women are in the cannabis industry. So did you find that was kind of the real impetus to get Women Grow to have their four objectives of connecting, educating, inspiring? Mm-hmm. What is the tangible that you provide for your members that help build that?
Absolutely. And I'd like to add on to what you asked earlier in terms of numbers. And when you think about the cannabis industry today, there's a number of companies that are publicly traded. And I think we're probably at what, like 30 publicly traded cannabis companies. And only two of those publicly traded companies are women CEOs.
That is mind blowing. It truly is.
So I wanted to add that because while there's only two, and yes, there should be more, it's also something for what I feel like are small business owners who are starting in this industry to aspire towards, because I know those two CEOs and they're incredible women. And I do know where they started and where their companies have grown to. And so when we talk about connecting, we use the term less members and we use the term more community, you know, yes. We're connecting through community, right? The whole point of our signature networking events, which started out in 2015. And then, you know, again, until the pandemic, we were still hosting
the world, right? Shut down.
Whole world shut down. You're absolutely right. We were hosting these monthly networking signature, the signature networking events, right? And this is where like minds came together every month. And this is where people found their business partners. This is where they were introduced to new ideas and new topics in education. This is where people found their service providers. So it was a true community, right? So that's why part of our mission is to connect. The education part, people often found at our signature networking events. Why? Because there was always a time dedicated to panel discussions or keynote speaker. And those meetings were often themed, right? So perhaps it was cannabis and caregiving, or perhaps it was learning how to identify the best attorney for your business. And so it was a mixed use of information, but always something that people could walk away applying to their personal or business. And then when you think about the empowerment piece of it, when you hear many of these speakers or meet many of these people at our events, you can't help but to walk away and be empowered by that and inspired by the work that people are doing. And in addition, what we were doing again pre-pandemic, we also hosted the largest women's conference in the industry. And that was our leadership conference. And the last one we held was in 2019, unfortunately, because we weren't able to hold one in 2020. And we were trying to hold one in 2021 and to do something virtually. And there's still plans to do something at least small scale this year, but right. Fingers crossed.
I'm going to cross them for you.
Oh my goodness. Well, fingers crossed for something small this year, but double fingers crossed that, you know, if we are all able to be more healthier and safe, just given the virus, perhaps we can have an in-person event. And I think that's really what led us to move everything virtually. In regards to our events, right? We've been doing a lot of things virtually to reach more people, to continue the community engagement and to continue the education.
Fantastic. And if our listeners want to get involved with Women Grow, how can they join or be part of or volunteer, whatever they might want to bring to the table?
I love this question because we get it all the time and everyone's like, I want to become a member. And I was like, well, actually right now is the best time to just follow us on all of our social media platforms. And here's the reason why. What we learned during the pandemic is that everyone ran to social media for connectivity, right? And this is where, you know, you watch the virtual conferences. And so through our partnerships right now, we've got incredible partnerships with a number of leading companies in the industry that want to support what we're doing. So for example, tomorrow, and I don't know when this is airing, but here's an example of education. Tomorrow we're doing a whole talk on supplier diversity. And so we're introducing what supplier diversity is to the industry. Why? Because it's not just about getting products on shelves. It's also about these companies hiring women-owned, diverse-owned businesses to service them, whether if it's delivery, whether if it's waste management, whether if it's accounting, it's like HR.
The whole industry needs to open up, be inclusive of everyone.
Exactly. But also introducing an emerging industry to opportunities that we've seen in other sectors, right? We've seen another mainstream, but this is something that's very new for cannabis to have supplier diversity. And so, you know, for those who are looking to get involved, we say follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. Our LinkedIn, we were told so many businesses have had their best hires by posting career opportunities through us. And they were so thankful that we were posting jobs and that we were encouraging people to take a look at some of the companies.
I was actually going to ask you, what are some of your, if there's a few that stand out, some of your major success stories?
Oh, gosh.
I'm sure there's many, but
there's so many, but I mean, and I love this question. So I want to just finish back. So anyone that is asking, how do you join? How do you follow? We certainly encourage you to follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Why? Because we're really engaging there. We post a lot of information that's part of the connectivity and education. But success stories, again, I'll use tomorrow's panel as a great example. One of the speakers was a former Women Grow market leader. And I remember meeting her in 2017, and she came to our leadership conference with one bar of soap. It was a CBD infused soap. And she had a whole product line. And she said, I'm just coming with this one bar of soap. So I meet her and we talk, and she's telling me how she wants to get more involved. And so, you know, from that meeting, we then engage, and eventually she, you know, decides to take over the Arizona market. Well, that was 2017 into 2018. Today, this woman has a full medibles line. She has a full product line. She's got warehouses. She now has a partnership with one of the leading MSOs.
Can you say the company or?
Absolutely. It's called 420 Collectives. Okay. And that woman that I met with the bar of soap was Marvina Thomas.
Wow.
And we're so proud of her and the work that she and her team are doing.
Huge, 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 huge. The will, the way it happened. How many people do you think are in your community at Women Grow? A rough guesstimate. And obviously you mentioned global as well.
So I'll give you pre-pandemic numbers because it's a little different now, right? So I would say nationally, based on our meetings, you know, so attendance at our meetings were averaging anywhere from 150 to the most like 350 people at a meeting, right? Our membership had gone, I think, probably up into the thousands. But what's interesting is that we're not just exclusive to members, right? Because we figure if you're coming to the meeting, you want to be a part of the community. And we don't want membership to be the reason why you cannot join and why you cannot be a part of it. And so that's why we changed the language from members to community, right? To create a more inclusive. We don't want anyone to feel left out, that if their member dues or something, that they just couldn't participate. So that's why I went to attendees. And so when I look at the number of attendees we had pre-pandemic across the country, we were well into, I think like averaging about 10,000 people plus per month, like going to these meetings. Like, that's incredible. When you think about where people were going and, you know, I think they couldn't wait at times to wait until the next month. So they were always looking for more engagement and more things to do. So, you know, kudos to all the market leaders and all the incredible
people out there. Kudos to Women Grow. And you know what? I do want to switch gears a little and give kudos to you, because I want to add that not only are you the president of Women Grow, you're the founder and CEO of GVM Communications.
Yes, thank you.
2019 was ranked in Forbes as one of the leading PR firms in cannabis.
Thank you.
You are on the whole other side as well. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your communications?
Sure. Absolutely. Thank you so much for asking. And so GVM stands for Great Visions and Minds. And so many people ask, is that your initial? I was like, no, it was just an idea that came to me in 2012, which, believe it or not, the company launched April 20th, 2012. And I had no idea of the significance in 2012 would lead me into the industry, because I didn't start my company with the mindset of I'm going into the cannabis industry. I started the company because I had already had prior years in PR. And I thought, well, why not give it a try myself?
You had been the media relations specialist or point person at Goldman Sachs for 15 years. How do you feel being in that industry helped you carry some of those things you learned and skill sets into being in the cannabis industry?
Oh, it prepared me beyond, more than my expectation.
In what sense do you think the most beneficial?
So what's interesting about financial services overall is that it touches everything that we do in this world, right? I mean, it really... when you think about, you know, manufacturing, legal, you think about, you know, mergers and acquisitions, you think about everything that's happening. And when I look at the cannabis industry, as I already mentioned, there's 30 plus something publicly traded companies. And so when I hear that a company in the cannabis industry is merging, I understand what those transactions are like. When I hear about supplier diversity, I'm very familiar with that, because at Goldman Sachs, they had a supplier diversity program. And so many of the things that I experience in the corporate setting, I'm seeing evolve and develop here in cannabis. And right. So that's why I say it prepared me more than my, you know, more than I could ever believe. Because this is an emerging industry. So we're really starting from soup to nuts, like just
square one.
We need everything.
In 2019, you were honored at the Cannabis Trailblazer Awards, which honors people of color who are pioneering in the cannabis industry. And I wanted to ask you about that. How did it feel to win the first year of those awards? And what award did you win?
You know, it's so interesting. So I often tell people, one, I didn't know I was going to end up in cannabis. I didn't know. I had no idea. If had you asked me in 2011 and 2012, I still wouldn't have known that I would be here. But when I look back and I see my prior work experience as well as my upbringing, I realized that it was actually preparing me for the space that I'm in now. And so I was awarded the Trailblazer because of the works that we're doing, not only with GVM Communications, but also with Women Grow. We partnered with the first church in the United States and actually globally to host the first cannabis conference. And the fact that, you know, the religious leaders at this church felt it was important to bring that access of information to the community free was something that really ended up being a conversation between myself and a pastor and him being very open to it. It was you know, some of the work that we're doing now with a college and that other higher institutions in bringing that education to students as well as to the community. So I don't, you know, it's weird to kind of talk about awards, but what I would say is I understand why I'm here and I want to continue moving forward because I see the opportunities. I like to say that Women Grow was the gateway for me into the industry. Do you remember the phrase like gateway drug, right? And I'm like, no, let's turn that negative into a positive. I see this industry and this legal industry being the gateway into limitless opportunities for all of us. And especially for those that really thought, you know, wow, here's an opportunity to start over. Here's an opportunity to contribute to my community. Here's an opportunity to discover a new medicine that could really help and heal people. And here's an opportunity to get with like-minded people and just create incredible stuff.
I can't wait to see how the industry develops with people like you taking charge, helping it grow in all the right ways. Gia, I really want to thank you for your time. It's been such a pleasure. And for our listeners, if you missed any of this great interview with Gia Moran, you can go to W420 Radio Network and click on the archive section to listen to this and other great interviews. And we'll be right back.
W420RadioNetwork.com.
Well, today, a fun show with a musician, a producer, a yacht captain, a sailor, a longtime cannabis connoisseur, founder of Guild Extracts. He's an author. What does a man not do? He's a Renaissance man, Jerry Robertson. Welcome to the W420 Radio Network, brother. How are you?
Hey, very good. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, your tales are legendary going back to the day you were involved with Carlos Santana and Journey and the cannabis connection. So tie us all in, because we all know that cannabis is a creative spark, and music and good weed go together great.
Yes, they do.
Well, tell us the origins of how you got together with Journey. Was that first, or it was Santana first? And
the Santana band. I started working for Santana when I was about, 18, 19 years old. And we'd go on the road and set up all the equipment for them. We turned that into a company called Primo Productions. And then we went worldwide with Santana for, about 5-6 years. And then we turned that whole program into the Journey Band.
Wow. So now was your role what was your role actually?
I was like an entrepreneur. I already made a bunch of money myself, so I had some money to spend on equipment, and I bought a house for all the rock and rollers. We were from Lafayette, so I brought the band over, the Frumious Bandersnatch band from Lafayette, some of the Steve Miller guys, to Forest Knowles out here in Marin County.
Awesome. And that's California. That's Northern California for the uninitiated or out of town. Yeah. So right. When we talking about the late 60s, early 70s?
Early 70s, yep, 1970.
Well, I remember meeting Carlos Santana and telling him about my experience at the Bay Area Music Awards, the BAMMIES, when I thought his band was transcendent. And he said, it's always great when the music plays the band.
Absolutely.
And I love that.
Yeah, what an amazing guy, amazing musician, just an incredible personality and a friend, we have a long history.
Sure. And tell me how the weed world infused some of the creative spark for the musicians that you work with and around.
Right. Well, the first time I smoked pot, it was during the Vietnam, when Vietnam War was just starting to rage, and Quicksilver Messenger Service was the band. And I watched them play and went outside and smoked some pot with a couple of guys, and it changed my life forever. So got me into the music world and got me out of Vietnam. I just wanted to make music, be with the music, play the music, and just enjoy it.
What wonderful. As Quick Messenger Service said, have another hit of Sweet Air, right?
That was a great they did.
Signature song. So Carlos, as I think I know correctly, is a big fan, and I know the guys at Journey are. So we gotta share some inside stories that wouldn't sell out the guys, but what can you share with us?
With the Journey guys?
Yeah, and with Carlos. I mean, how that impacted or influenced his music and in the herb world and the like.
Well, you know, like I said, I was there for the music and the fun and the experience, the travels. the last gig that I really did with them was in Europe in the Montreux Jazz Festival. So, just traveling the world with them and just experiencing all that music. We'd be on the road with Jose Feliciano and Buddy Miles and all these incredible characters, BB King, and I got to meet all these cats and hang out with them, and it's just a thrill of a lifetime.
Well, we all know that a lot of these guys like to fire it up maybe after the show, but what about before the show? What was the regimen like, the routine?
Most of the guys were climbing out of bed at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, getting ready for the gig that night. So, everybody was getting excited and, some of them drank, some of them took acid, some of them smoked a little pot, some of them did some other stuff. And, it was just always, a different scene, and the music changed every night. I have to tell you, all those songs, when they're being live on stage, they change them up in the middle and they do different stuff, and it was always new every night. It was always an amazing show.
Sure. Now, when I met your son, Brad, who is an awesome dude, and we interviewed him, and it'll be airing on the America's Cannabis Conversation shortly, about the Guild Extracts, the dispensary, actually. It's a company that focuses on concentrates and THC crystalline and molecular isolates. I mean, I thought I was talking with a PhD in chemistry or something, but you've been involved in that and one of the founding members. So talk a little bit about that stuff, which is taking cannabis 2.0 to the next level.
Yeah, certainly. My son has been on the forefront of all this innovation in the cannabis business. We started this company, we've been at it for the better part of 10 years now, developing this. And he just loves being in the lab. He loves coming up with new ideas and isolates and all this stuff. And, I don't pretend to even know anything, much about it, really. I listen, I learn, but, it's a whole different level.
Yeah. Now, THCA powder and batter and live sauce and things that, I'm an aficionado like you, and we go back, we're OGs, man. We go back to day, but this is all new to me. So what can you share about what your son has taught you as we go intergenerational in the cannabis world?
Right. Well, he just really got on his phone, really literally, and started doing research. And he found all, the places like the Israelis and the Spaniards were, really innovative in finding, all of these compounds that come out of the cannabis plant. So he started studying and figuring it all out. And, you know, pretty soon he's in the lab doing the same experiments that they were and drawing these incredible compounds out of, you know, out of the oil. So that's, you know, that's really where it started. And he just accelerated. Pretty soon we were making THCA, which is a non-psychotropic ingredient that people can take in large doses for their health. And if they, you know, they can't stand the high part of the cannabis plant, then they get all of that medication and they can, you know, it helps them.
Yeah, the evolution is incredible. And it's really a shame that there is very little federal research, that it has to be entrepreneurs like yourself and your son with Guild Extracts doing a lot of the challenging, you know, new world research, because the federal government doesn't want to either put money or do anything to make it happen.
No, not at all. The pharmaceuticals are, you know, pharmaceutical companies, the big oil production companies, and, you know, cotton, and, you know, there's a tons of industries that are just against the cannabis movement for lots of reasons.
Yeah, it threatens their turf. Well, speaking of turf, when I met your son on your beautiful Empress yacht in Richmond Harbor in Northern California a few weeks ago in your Canna Connect gathering, that is just a blast. He showed me a photo of you, Jerry. You're sitting down. Well, you should tell the tale. This is 1974 in Afghanistan, and you're smoking hash. What is this all about? How did that come to be?
Well, so it was the last show of the Santana tour in Europe, was in Montreux. And my girlfriend and I bought a car and started driving around Europe. We ended up down in Greece and then up to Turkey and off to Afghanistan we went. You know, Kabul didn't look very far when we were looking at it in Istanbul on a map. So we drove all the way there and up by the Khyber Pass. And on the way out of the country, we stopped at this, at an oasis, literally. And that's when I met that family. And it was the last day we were really in Afghanistan. So I shaved off a bunch of hash into that nice big hookah pipe. And we smoked it up with that, with the family. It was just wonderful.
Yeah. Now, they were the ones, as a host, welcoming you with their Afghani hash?
Yeah. Well, I had it. I had it with me, and I had that pipe with me. But, you know, in the desert, you know, you come upon these oases, and literally an oasis with olive trees and it's a fortress. I mean, behind us, you can't see it in the picture, but there's literally a fortress. And behind that fortress is a reservoir of water. And they rule the whole region because they have that water. And that was a family that we just stopped on the side of the road to get under the shade of the trees when they came down to see who was on their property.
We
ended up being really good friends. I had some medicine with me, and then they had some medical issues. I gave them all my, you know, my whole medicine cabinet, and then also all the Afghani money I had in my pocket. And of course they loved me for that, and we were forever friends.
Wow. So what was the experience like in smoking the peace pipe outside of Kabul, Afghanistan? That's wild. Not many people can tell that tale.
It was an amazing experience. They, you know, the Afghanis were the most beautiful people in the world. They really were. They, everywhere we went, their arms were open. They wanted us in their homes. They wanted to cook for us and know who we were. It was just, they're amazing people. It's just a horrible shame what has happened to the beautiful country and the beautiful people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad there was a bond for you, and facilitated by the great, wonderful world of herb. That is awesome. Hey, I understand you had an interesting Father's Day. A Rock and Roll Hall of Famer hanging out. What's this?
Yeah, that's right. My friend Ross Valerie and his beautiful wife came to my house here in Sausalito. And my son and his beautiful girl and my new grandboy, Cole. and my friend Steven, and we had a beautiful barbecue and enjoyed the day. And then we had a nice jam. At the end of the day, we did, we did like four or five songs, and Ross played bass and I played my guitar and sang, and Steven played the backup and rhythm. It was a little Cole. We had a little Cole on the conga drum. So
that's awesome. For those who don't know, Ross Valerie was the original bassist for Journey in a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. Now, do I understand correctly that you're writing a book about some of your exploits in the music world?
I am. It should be out. I'm hoping it's out in the fall, probably by the winter time next year, we'll have this thing out and hopefully published and on the shelves where everybody can read it.
Yeah. What's the focus?
It's the primary title is going to be From Santana to Journey, A Trip with Bands. That's potentially going to be the title. And okay. It's literally, you know, from my early days with Santana and, you know, producing the Journey band and being on the road with those guys, and lots of cool stories in between, you know, some of the stuff that happened on the road and meeting some of the stars and hanging out with B.B. King and, you know, stuff like that.
And don't forget Lucille, right?
Yeah, I can't forget Lucille.
Hey, you got to give us a little snippet. You got to give us a little sneak peek. Give me a cool Carlos Santana story that will be part of your book so we can, you know, get whet our appetite a little bit.
Okay. Well, there was a little incident in Puerto Rico when the stage was stormed by the crowd, got past the barriers, and they were all climbing underneath the stage and forcing the stage to almost collapse, and we all had to gather all our stuff up and run for the cars and limos that were waiting for us, so that's one story. It, you know, grabbing Carlos by the, you know, by the back of the shirt and kind of dragging him along with me to jump in the while the crowds were like really literally storming the stage.
Wow!
So that's one little thing.
Yeah. How about a journey tale? Give us a journey.
Okay, let's see a journey story. Well, I'll tell you what. When we first made that band, when we first had the band together, so that was Neil Sean, Greg Raleigh, Ross, Valerie, and George Tickner. And the first time we recorded, the drummer was late. That was Ainsley Dunbar hadn't shown up yet. And so I was sat in on the traps and played drums for the tune-up for the recording, the first recording we ever did with the Journey band.
Oh my goodness! Look at you jumping in when needed you. Awesome. Hey, Jerry,
yeah, right.
It was super.
Give him the hook.
Well, did he supplant you? Did he regain his throne? What happened?
Yeah, well, I tuned it all up for him, you know. Oh, I had it all tuned for him when Ainsley came in the room and sat down.
Well, good. Jerry Robertson, you're a cool dude. Thanks for sharing some fun stories. Look forward to reading your book. You have a title yet?
Yeah, I think we're going to call it From Santana to Journey, A Trip with the Bands.
Okay, yeah.
Or something like that.
Okay, that works.
If you have any suggestions, you have some suggestions, let me know.
Well, rock on, man. That's awesome. And continued success on the seas and on land and the Guild Extracts and the yacht, the Empress. Hopefully we can get back on the Canada Connect ship once more.
Yeah, no doubt. You're always invited, Rich. I really I really appreciate you having me on your show today.
Well, it's a blast. You're a good dude. This is the W420 Radio Network. If you want to hear this again or excerpts, you go to W420RadioNetwork.com/archive. I'm Rich Walkoff. Thank you, Jerry Robertson, and we'll be right back.
W420RadioNetwork.com. We're part of the W420 Radio Network. Tune in each week to hear tips on investing in cannabis markets, personal success stories, and more. Join America's Cannabis Conversation. W420RadioNetwork.com.